I think I got it. Thank you very much. Hi, folks. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for that very nice introduction. And it's great to be here with you guys. Did most of you go to the, where were we at? The Unity Church? A lot of you guys from the, I got up to step two at the Unity Church, and then all of a sudden, you had to leave that church. And I want to tell you, I was talking about James and Rachel, how great they are. You know, they have this group that meets at the temple. What is that, on Wednesday nights?
Monday nights.
And a wonderful group. And Peter doing the steps there? Is that it? And they had the Unity group, that was the Life is Good group, this group, that was meeting at the church, and, you know, they had a little disagreement with the church, and it was understandable because of the smoking, and so they went around, and they ran around. You know, I think service is so important. It really shows where your heart is. When they say, in AA, they say when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. And, but these are guys that really go out there, and like a lot of y'all, they go out there and they got it done. They got this incredible venue. It's a beautiful place, beautiful church. And so I get to go through, because I've had some calls saying, well, where's that? Because the thing's on the internet. They said, where's the third step? We haven't heard the third step. And I said, well, because we lost the church. So now I'm going to. So for you who weren't involved in that deal, this is a 12-step series, and we're going to start off with the third step. If you want to get the first two steps, it's on rocketed.org, and you can listen to them. And so we're starting off on step three. But that shouldn't be a big problem, because as you know, all my steps are basically step three steps, disguised as other steps. So as I said, I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And it's great to share this with you. I always pray. I have other people praying for me. I go to Bible study on Thursdays and different venues where, as a matter of fact, I was walking up there, I saw they had a Celebrate Recovery group, and the guy who was with me said, so which one are you going to go to? Yeah. I said, they're going to be the same deal. So, because I'm very much involved in that sort of ministry in my church and things like that. And I'm always praying that I'm able to carry my message. It's my message. I believe it's the message that's consistent with the big book. But, of course, we all have our personal messages. They say AA is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, and I hope I'll be your wrench tonight, or at least you get something from it. Listen, it's like anything else. You big boys and girls, you can take what you like, leave the rest, not take anything. But I'm going to try to be transparent and tell my deal. Those of you who know me know that focusing on God and relationship with God is the whole thing for me, the whole entire thing for me. I'm not going to tell you what church to go to, what synagogue to go to, what God to worship or anything like that. I know what my deal is all about. They say we're not alive with any sect, denomination, or fellowship or religion, and that's true, but I'll tell you one thing. I found in order for me to stay sober and become emotionally sober, I better get my ass alive. So I got alive. Okay, it's important to get alive, because getting alive has to do with having a relationship. It's like that old country western song. If you don't stand for something, you're going to fall for anything. So, one of the things that it told me in the big book, it says, first of all, I got to quit playing God. That's what it says in the big book about Box and Arms. It says you got to stop playing God. And when you're not alive, you're playing God. You're making the decisions. Nobody else is making decisions. You got to, the big book, I don't know how many people know this, the big book, I'm going to read some things from the book. Did you know it encourages church membership? I love the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very important. By the way, it's not Well People's Anonymous. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous has one problem. It is made up of alcoholics. And, you got to be careful. You're not going to slip down to the lowest common denominator. Hopefully what happens is the fellowship is you're brought up to a certain level and you don't slip back down again to another level. And there's a lot of voices screaming in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're screaming for entertainment. You can have your entertainment needs. And boy, wasn't that guy great? Boy, that was fun. There's nothing wrong with entertainment. I hope I'm entertaining. Sometimes, God, you hate to be preachy. You don't want to be a bleeding deacon, and it's important to have a message of great depth and weight. But, I'll tell you, it's so important that the message of recovery. The true message of recovery doesn't get lost in bread and circuses. You know, just listening, you know, slapping each other on the back, or just another bar where we're just drinking coffee. And nobody's really getting any better than just not drinking. You know, God forbid, you know, I sponsor a lot of guys, you know, 33 years sobriety, I sponsor a lot of guys that have 20, 25 years, and they're living lives of quiet desperation, and thumb-sucking crybabies, and they got all sorts of problems going on. They can't get a decent relationship, they're on their fourth marriage, and, you know, it's just some horrible stuff going on. You'd be surprised about how long you can actually stay away from alcohol and not really recover. How long you can hang on to old ideas. You know, the problem with AA is, let me tell you a couple of truths based on my experience. All I got is my experience. You know, that old story my sponsor said, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with the experience. Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, to a certain extent, there are some things in Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book, although I love, which are not exactly correct. And let me give you one for example. You know how they say half measures avail us nothing? You know, here's the unfortunate thing. Half measures sometimes avail you something. You know, there are guys that stay sober for 10 or 15 years doing half measures. The problem is, when I guess they say half measures avail us nothing, what half measures do is they may avail you of physical sobriety, but you won't get that experience pleasure of heaven being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. You know, when you hang around here long enough, when you first come in here, you think it's because you can't stop drinking. That's why I came in here, because I thought I couldn't stop drinking, because I couldn't stop drinking. I was drinking against my will. After you've been here for a month or two or three or four or five or maybe 4 or 5 years, and you've gone through the vagaries of life, you've gone through what life has to offer, you've gone through the bounce checks, the broken relationships, all the stuff we go through in here, the disappointments, and you're not drinking, but suicide is definitely an option from time to time, and you're still calling yourself names, and you're still condemning yourself, and you come to the realization somehow, some way, that you're one sick son of a bitch, but you ain't drinking. And you sort of like go away around AA long enough to realize that you sort of understand what this alcoholism is, and you know it has very little to do with drinking, which is a symptom of disease, that the real disease centers your mind and your body. And you know something, you're going to meetings more, but you're just enjoying it less. And you just can't, you get to a certain level where you're not drinking and you don't want to drink, but you just can't get above that glass ceiling. You're just at that home to work, is this what life is all about? And every once in a while you look around and you'll see a man or a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And just like in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, where the guy says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. You know, you look around AA and you see a crowd of people, a cloud of witnesses that swear to the fact, you know it's true, they're just not drinking. They're not drinking. But a lot of them are unhappy. Some of them are moody. They're always talking about their problems. As a matter of fact, they sound just like you because you're always talking and thinking about your problems. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're lonely. Hell, you're married and you're lonely. You know what I mean? You're dating and you're lonely. You feel like you're all alone. You don't feel much different than the way you felt when you were drinking, except you're not drinking. At least you got a place to go. You're still carrying around secrets. But every once in a while, you know there's something more. You see there's something more. You just don't know how to grab for it. You don't know how to get. You hear the promises, and you think you've experienced 1 or 2, maybe 3 or 4 of them for a few moments, maybe for a day, one time. You know what I mean? But they're just not a permanent sort of thing. You know, and it's just not working for you. You read this language in the Big Book, and you're saying, I got 5 years, I got 10 years, I got 15 years. When is it going to work out for me? You think maybe if you do another 4-step or another 5th step or another 10th step or another this step or that step or whatever the steps are, maybe go to more meetings, it'll work out for you, and it just doesn't. The more steps you do, the steps are just not working for you. It's just not working. And you see people, you'll see a person in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's just like the guy said, I knew there was something more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. We'll read that story. And you just don't know how to get that deal. Where to go for that deal? You know, I have a heart for people that have I have a heart for newcomers, but I have a heart for people that have time in Alcoholics Anonymous and have reached a certain level and they can't seem to get farther than that deal. You know, one of the things it says, first of all, it says our real problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. That's the real problem. You know, you get rid of the drinking, but how do you get rid of the thinking? The thinking about yourself. to think about your life, to think about what's happened to you. It says, we filled with, what does it say? Right here, it says, let's see, I'll read it straight from the book. I sort of got it memorized, but what the heck? It says, selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time past we have placed or made decisions based on self, which has later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-overrun riot, though he usually doesn't think so. And you know what they also say? They say our alcoholic life seems normal to us. The way we think seems normal to us, seems comfortable to us. And you know when they talk about this selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, listen to me. They're not talking about how you feel when you're drinking. You know how you feel like you're drinking? Ready? Better. Better. The reason you drink is because alcoholics, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, selfish, self-centered, fearful, self-seeking. Unless you can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. You drink because all that crap they're describing, the selfishness and self-centeredness, is the way you feel naturally, chronically, forever, progressively, sober. Now, you drink enough, you know, the manifestation of the symptom of drinking actually takes it over and they arrest you. I mean, they don't arrest you for driving while selfish. They don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry. Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry to pull you over, but I couldn't help but say that you were feeling sorry for yourself. You know, I'm pulling you over for, you know, they don't arrest you for driving while fat. You know what I mean? They arrest you for the drinking. So you obviously think drinking's a problem. But the problem is you drink because you're selfish and you're self-centered and you're thinking and the way you think, which is natural for you, you don't know any other way of thinking. Guess what? As soon as you stop drinking, guess what takes over? The thinking. That type of thinking is what we really, that type of thinking we call alcoholism. The drinking is not alcoholism, that's a symptom of the disease. The disease is something that centers in your mind, in your body, it's called alcoholism. It says above, here's what it says. Now, this is a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not some Bible thumper who's talking to you, although I read the Bible, but it's not, I'm talking about, this is scriptural. This is right out of the book. I don't know what organization you're in. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. This is our basic text. This is what it says. It says, above all, we must get rid of the selfishness. You see, if you can't get rid of the selfishness, you can't get rid of the alcoholism. And the alcoholism is going to kill you. Dr. Carl Menninger said, alcoholics are men and women who are out destroying themselves. When you're in the shower lathering up and all of a sudden the voice comes, what an asshole am I? I ought to be dead. I don't deserve to live. You know what that is? That's alcoholism. You know, when you don't go for that job or you don't raise your hand or you don't do this or you don't do that because you know you're not good enough or you're worthless or they're going to laugh at you or something like that, that's alcoholism. When you sit around feeling sorry for yourself, when you look at a billboard and say, why can't I have this and why can't I have that, and you're a yes only, you're an if only, you're a yes butter, and a you don't understander, an excuse maker, that's alcoholism. When all you do is sit around and with these voices in your head worrying about what people think about you and why they said that to you and why they aren't calling or why they are calling or why they look at you that way, that's alcoholism. That's what that. Now, how are you going to get rid of that? You've been doing that all your life. You were doing that way before you started drinking. You've been doing it way after you stopped drinking. That fear of people. You know you're fearful of people. I know you're fearful of people because the big book says you'll lose fear of people. Why would it say you'll lose fear of people is one of the promises if you weren't scared shitless of their judgment and how they think, what they think about you. Don't tell me you're not scared of people when you're asked to do a meeting and you say, I'm not ready. Why don't you just tell them the truth? I'm scared shitless. They're going to think they're going to laugh at me. You know, don't tell me you're not scared of losing money or not having money or stuff like that when it says fear of economic insecurity. It's nothing but fear with everybody in here. It's nothing but fear with me. How do you get rid of that stuff? Go to another discussion meeting where you can talk more about that crap or hear other people talk more about that crap. Where do you go for the solution in this place when everybody's sucking their thumb and feeling sorry for themselves? And every once in a while we gather together, we listen to a guy and he makes us laugh, he does a little drunk along or something like that, and then you feel good for about a half an hour, and you walk out and you get in your car, and you drive away and you feel crappy again. You know? I mean, how do you fix that deal? So it says right here, above everything, we must get rid of this alcohol. We must, or it kills us, it's selfishness. It says right here. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-denis much by willing or trying on our own power. That's what they said in chapter 8 of Gnostics. Of a mere code of morals, you know, we'd be sober a long time ago. That ain't going to work. So then it tells you the solution. The solution is all over the book. Did you know that? Here it is. It says, we had to have God's help. We had to have God's help. We had to live a life of faith. Now, here's the problem you have. You've joined an organization called Alcoholics Anonymous. You may be brand new. You may not understand what I'm saying. You don't have to. It's all okay. You listen to the tape 5 years from now. It'll make sense. I wouldn't have understood what I was saying anyway. I'm not sure I understand what I'm saying. So here's the problem you have. You have a disease called alcoholism. That's why you're here. I have no idea why anybody would be here unless they were an alcoholic. So you have a disease called alcoholism. I know you got it because when you go to meetings, you say something like, hi, my name is Jan. I'm an alcoholic, you know? So you confess it. You understand? You might as well accept it. You got it. You've been talking about it, okay? You showed up here tonight, okay? So you have this disease called alcoholism, okay? You've got this, you belong to this organization called Alcoholics Anonymous. The organization has a basic textbook, says something like, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and this is the textbook. It doesn't say we're thoroughly following your path. You understand what I'm saying? It's saying you've got to come in here and thoroughly follow our path, and the result, by the way, is nil until you let go absolutely. And in this book, it says we've got to get rid of this selfishness or it kills us, and then it says God makes that possible. Now here's the problem. How are you going to get where you want to go unless you have faith in God? How are you going to do that thing? How are you going to do that deal? I'm sorry. I mean, that's the deal. It says this is the how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. God was going to be our director. So here's the deal. You wake up in the morning and say, you line up bed, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're going, oh man, what am I going to do with the rest of my frickin' life? How am I going to get out of this jail? What am I going to do? How long am I going to be stuck in this job? How am I going to get out of this relationship? You know, I'm already 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. What's going to happen to me? And so, you know, like a good alcoholic, you do what you always do. You sort of think on that for a while. And then you look and you say, man, I got to get to sleep. You know, you got to think on that. You got to work that thing out. And then you look and it's like 5 o'clock in the freaking morning, you know. You say, man, I'm going to be dead for the rest of the day. And I don't know, what am I going to do next year, you know. And listen, and you haven't had a drink, you know, it's not alcohol. It's something called alcoholism, and you're a dead turkey. Because God's not your director, because you don't have God. Because you haven't quit playing God. Because you know who your God is? You're your God. Because you're asking you what you should do, and you don't have the answer. Well, of course you don't. You're the one you're asking is the one you're saying is full of shit and should die. And that's the one where you're going to for advice. But you see, the person who has God says, doesn't ask what's he going to do. He says, God, what would you have me do? And then he goes to sleep. And he knows God's going to deliver the answer. He lives a life of faith. This big book is about living a life of faith, not a life of fear. And what that can do for you when you start living that way. Now, how do you deal with a bunch of alcoholics who are self-centered in the extreme, they're know-it-all, and their chief characteristic is defiance, and they've never lived that way in their entire life because they're scared, and they need to be in control, and they want to look cool, and they think other people laugh at them if they look bad. How do you handle an alcoholic who, whenever you mention stuff like that, says, go to hell, you're full of shit? And the truth is, there's nothing you can do for that person. There's absolutely nothing you can do. You can't force it on them. All you can do is give testimony and show them this is where it's at, and this is what we do, and this is what the book says, and let them bounce on out of here, and then bounce back in, and bounce on back out, and then bounce back in. And one day when they bounce in and they're 40 or 50 years old, they say something like this. You know, I first saw you when I was 25. I thought you were full of shit, but you want to know something? I've been listening to you, and you're right. And they'll tell you, my life couldn't have been better. And you just let them do their 15 years in the state penitentiary until they figure it out. So that's all you got to decide. You know, the same address rehearsal. You got to decide what you want. Whether you want a life of fear or faith. Whether you want to live, whether you want to be right or you want to be happy. Whether you want to live a life of hope or you want to live a life of fear. You know, I mean, you know, some people, no matter what's going on, they just know everything. You know, it's divided up into two groups of people. One group of people say, hey, listen, there is no God. There ain't no person running the universe. It's all a matter of faith. You either get run over by a car, you don't get run over the car. You get cancer, you don't get cancer. You die, you don't die. It's the fickle finger of fate. Whatever happens, happens. Ain't nobody going to help you. You better rely on yourself or else you're a dead chicken. And, you know, if you're living that life and if that's the way you believe, then the cavalry ain't coming over the hill. It's never going to be okay. You always got to be on your toes. You better be sharp and awake and alive. You better know what you're doing because they're out to screw you. And when you live that kind of life, you live a life of fear. And there's another group of people, smaller group of people. And they know that no matter what happens, there is a God, that He ultimately works for your good, even in times when it looks like it's bad. And if you have just the faith in Him, it's all going to work out one way or the other, no matter how bad it gets or what happens, things are going to work out because He's a benevolent God and all things work out for the good. And you know something? You may go through some sort of rough times, but you know what the bottom line is? You're going to live a life of hope. So you just have to decide whether you want to stay up till 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning thinking about all sorts of crap and not get anywhere, or whether you want to get a good night's sleep. That's all you got to figure out, what kind of sobriety you want. See to it your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You know, I just have faith that alcoholics, you know, I know alcoholics, and I know they may be selfish, but I know they want a better life. Some want a better life. It says this, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Now, this is not necessarily promises, but this is a promise. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He's not a higher power, He's the highest power. Being all-powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and perform our works well. He gives you everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform His work well. You get everything you need. All you have to do is stay close to Him and perform His work. You know, I mean, are you close to Him? Do you even know who He is? Are you performing His work? Do you even know what His work is? Or do you think His work is getting you a new car? Or do you think His work is getting you laid? Or do you think His work is getting you more money? Is that what you think His work is? Is that your work? Is that your selfish work? Maybe His work is for you to help another person, be of maximum service to other people. He'll provide everything you need. You can stay close to Him and perform His work well. By the way, I can't even take credit for this shit. I'm reading from the big book, Bob Walsh Anonymous. You know? So report me to New York, you know what I mean? It's not funny, you know, but I mean, I know it's not entertainment, you know, but sometimes you'll be surprised how many people can read this book and not see this stuff. They think they're doing the program and they're not doing it. They're doing weak AA. There's two types of AA going on here. There's weak and there's strong. We both live, we all meet in the same place. You'd be surprised how many people have actually read the book Alcoholics Anonymous and they have never seen this stuff. They walk up to me after me and says, man, I really love what you say. I said, you mean when I read from the big book? He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it, you know? I mean, it's like I read it 50 times. I never saw that shit. I thought acceptance is the answer to all my problems, you know? No, that's like one line, and sometimes it's not. It says, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became, now listen to this, less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. You ever lose sleep at night because you're so worried about how you can help other people? Oh, I can't get to sleep. I'm so concerned about helping other people. Me neither, you know? We're such selfish sons of a bitch. We You deserve to not get any sleep because of the shit we think about. Always thinking about ourselves, you know? I don't even see why it allows us to be alive on the planet, you know? We're so selfish. More and more we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life as we felt new power flow in as we enjoyed peace of mind. How about that deal? As we discovered we could face life successfully as we became conscious of His presence. Conscious of the presence of God. You say, well, I'm not conscious of His presence. Well, I guess you ain't doing it right. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. How about that crap? That's not a bad deal, being reborn, losing fear. Then it says later on, after Thursday prayer, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. By the way, you know why? It's not your fault that you don't get this. You know why? Because it's not taught in AA anymore. It's not emphasized in AA anymore, because AA has changed. We don't do the steps thoroughly anymore. We don't even talk about doing the steps because we're worried about that imaginary newcomer. You know, the guy who comes up and says, well, if they said that in AA when I came in, I wouldn't be here. That old-time fool that says that stuff. You know, we don't go to church, even though it's encouraged. We say bad things about church. We say, I'm spiritual, not religious. Like, religious is a dirty word. Even though in the big book, the first guy to see Bill Wilson said, I brought him a simple religious idea. It doesn't matter that in the big book, written in 1939, it says we lose all prejudice even against organized religion. In Alcoholics Anonymous today, we talk badly about religion and religious people. We put down anybody who mentions the Bible or anything like that. That's not the way it was when they were doing it thoroughly. We've moved from a God-based program to a psychological sort of deal. And people are staying sober for periods of time, but they're not being rocked in the fourth dimension of existence. They're not experiencing much of heaven. Now, after a while, after 5 or 10 or 15 years sobriety, you know, some people will get sick and tired of the sobriety they have and actually come on over to the deal. You know what I mean? They'll come on over, they'll come up to me, they'll come on over and say, I want more. And they'll come on over. But it's not like the way it was in the beginning, where it says, rarely have I seen a person fail, has thoroughly followed our path. In the beginning, when the whole thing was about God, and it was a true emphasis only upon God. It's not like that anymore. Okay, when they first wrote this book, what they said was, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role He assigns. Just the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate to us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear, direct our attention to what He would have us be, and once we commence to outgrow fear. I'd say, you know, I can read almost every page of the book and it says the same thing. See that the relationship with Him is right. Burn the idea into every person's mind. Job or no job, don't let them get away with it. Nonsense, it's all about your relationship with God. I can read almost every chapter, every page. It's all about God, 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 God. And you go to any A room and you talk anything other than higher power and just talk about God for more than 30 seconds and they'll beat the crap out of you. They'll beat the crap out of you. You know, just get around 33 years and then you'll realize they can't fire you. There's nothing they can do with you. But since part of alcoholism, one of the, you know, it says unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, sobriety will be precarious. And since one of the consequences of it being an alcoholic is that you feel shitty about yourself, and deep down inside you feel like you're a piece of crap, even though you tell yourself you don't care about what other people think about you. You tell yourself all those lies that, you know, you're good, you're a great guy, but you feel crappy. What happens is you succumb terribly to peer pressure. And you walk around fearful all your life that people are going to laugh at you. And so if you have 6 months or a year or 2 years and you just open your mouth one time and say God and somebody looks at you funny and say, you know, we don't talk about that crap there. That's it. That's you. You're burnt for the rest of your life in Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll never talk about it because you're basically a people pleaser. You'll prostitute yourself and your morals no matter what you say because you worry more about what the other guy sitting next to you thinks than what's actually working for you. And that's just the nature of alcoholism. And when you're hanging around with alcoholics, and most of them want to do it half measures, you're going to basically blend in with the crowd and do what the crowd wants you to do, notwithstanding the fact that you think it should be done differently. And you can't help that. That's part of the disease. And you're surrounded by people that are into the disease. And in order to break forward, you have to surrender even more. Yes, you've got to surrender even more than the alcohol. Yeah, you've got to surrender even more than your friends. You know what it says? It says, if you want, we have room to go to any lengths to get it. Any lengths, yes, at first it's the alcohol. Then it's the places. Then it's the friends. Yes, it's the resentments. Yes, you got to surrender more and more and more. The more surrender of the old ideas, the closer you get to him. It's tough surrendering the alcohol. It's even tougher surrendering the materialism. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Let me read you some. This is from Dr. Bob in Good Old Times. It's one of my favorite books. I think everybody really wants to know how this thing should be practiced. Don't believe me. Just read the book, Dr. Bob in Good Old Times. It's essentially about AA between 1935 and 1939, how they were really doing it. It actually goes past 1939 to like 1940, 45 and things like that, because for the first 10, 15 years, you know, it started changing after 20, 30 years. You can understand that. Organizations change. More people come in, more ideas come in, they sort of drift. It's like a drifting, okay? The bigger it's got big. When you get big, it sometimes gets diluted. There's less new. There used to be maybe one or two old-timers for, you know, like 10 newcomers. Now there's one or two old-timers for like 100 newcomers. You know what I mean? It just gets bigger and bigger. You go to a room and the guys for 10 years are running the room. Nothing wrong with that or right. It's just the nature of the beast. But, you know, like the book, like the game Telephone, we start losing the message as the message goes along. And the message gets weaker and weaker and tenuous, and you hardly realize that, hell, you're still sober, but you're sucking your thumb all the time. And you're feeling sorry for yourself, and your life is still kind of crappy, and you just seem you're not realizing the joy they have. You know, they said what do they say in the book? They said when they talk about just the book Alcoholics Anonymous, let's just get to that one part. I usually read it. The great fact is this: the great fact is that God has become the centerpiece of our lives. We're absolutely certain He lives in our lives. In our hearts, which is a way that is indeed miraculous. I mean, these people are God people. Yes, I mean, they were. I mean, there's no getting around it. Just look at that picture of Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson in 1938 or something, 39, when they're sitting there talking to Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. And Bill Wilson is sitting there with a Bible open. They say in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, the 3 books that we find absolutely essential for our sobriety are the Book of James, Sermon on the Mount, in 1 Corinthians 13, they say it right in our literature. So here, let me read you this. I want to read you a couple things. You know, it does say in our book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, right? Does it say that?
Yes.
It does use the word thoroughly, doesn't it?
Yes.
I thought so. So we have a book written in 1939 that says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. If you do what we did, you'll get what we got, right? So I want to read you something. This is from page 101 of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. This is what they were doing between 1935 and 1939. I'm sure you're going to see a real connection between what they were doing then and what we're doing now. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was a very important part. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. Bobby, who came into AA in February of 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps. He said, we call that the surrender. They demanded it. You could not go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamses' house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all of us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim. And all the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while they would tell us they had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that would come in now would survive an experience like that, a regular old-fashioned prayer meeting. Now let me ask you this. Here's a question I want to ask you. When they got this sucker down on his knees, before he got to the AA meeting, before he was allowed to get in, and told him to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable, and you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. When they had him do that, was that the first step or the third step? Was that the first step or the third step? I don't know what it was, but I'll tell you what, it wasn't what we do now, was it? Now, nobody said to you want to come to this meeting, you need to get down on your knees, we're taking you upstairs, admit in front of 12 people that you're powerless over alcohol, your life is unmanageable, I'm turning my will and my life over to God. Nobody told you that, right? If they did tell you that, this room might not be as full. Right? Right. I'm not saying we should do that. We might not be as full. Maybe it would be, I don't know, a third as full. Maybe a third of you would have gone ahead and done that, right? But the people that would be here would be of a different mind. It'd be a different type of meeting, wouldn't it? Probably be like that celebrated recovery meeting over there. So I'm just trying to point out to you that when you read a big book where it says, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed a path, and they talk about being rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, and they talk about losing fear, people that have not been in security, and they talk about all these incredible things that happen to them, these miraculous things happen to them, don't expect those things to happen to you, because they're not doing that stuff in AA anymore. I don't say they're not doing that stuff anymore. Some people are doing that stuff. But understand, when they say all that stuff, read Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers and understand what their commitment was, how serious they were, how sincere they were, and what they were actually doing. Don't make this mistake of fooling yourself as alcoholics to think that if you just lobbied on here and just surrender the booze and just basically do whatever the hell you want to do out there and just go to meetings and hang out and drink coffee and have fun with the speaker and say, boy, he was a good guy, and every once in a while I'll do a good deed for somebody, and maybe a sponsor somebody, maybe you don't, that you're doing anything close to what they were doing, the guys that wrote this book, what Dr. Bob was doing, what Bill Wilson was doing. And don't even get disappointed if you're not realizing the benefits they got, because it was a different deal. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, you're on notice. You know, you're big boys and girls. This is serious stuff. Let me read one more thing. This is Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. When Dr. Bob 12-steps somebody. This is how Dr. Bob 12-steps somebody. Actually, there's one written in the book. This is Dr. Bob 12-stepping Clarence, the brewmaster, one of the main movers and shakers of the Akron group. It says, Doc Smith came in later and took over. He sat on the edge of my bed and said, well, what do you think about all this? Then he paused and looked at me doubtfully. This is in Dr. Bob's Good Old Timers, number 43. Then he paused and looked at me doubtfully. I don't know if you're ready yet. You're kind of young. This is what Clarence says. I was down to 135 pounds, no job, no clothes, and no money. I didn't know how much more ready I could be, recalled Clarence. Still, I had to convince them I was ready. You know, here's the interesting thing. The same thing that used to get me in trouble out in the streets, you know, spending more money I had, spending money I didn't have to impress people, to buy stuff I didn't need, to impress people I didn't like, trying to have people like me, you know, prostituting myself and my morals just so you would say, come along with the group, you can join us. The same sort of stuff that used to kill me out in Alcoholics Anonymous, like to save me in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I wanted to be part of the group of the minors, of the people who are really doing this thing. So trust me, you align yourself, you see somebody, you want what they have, you align yourself with that deal, you'll find yourself doing shit you would never do before. The thing that's the weakness can become your strength, because you find yourself getting down on your knees, doing this stuff, not because you think it's going to work or you want to do it, but because you want your sponsor. And there's nothing wrong with that, because you want to be accepted. You know, let your disease work for you. Just don't let your picker screw you up and pick the wrong person. You know, here it goes. Then he asked this. I was down to 103 pounds. I didn't know how much more ready I could be, recalled Clarence. Still, I had to convince them I was ready. Then he asked. This the guy first meets him. You know, first meets him in the hospital. Then he asked, "Do you believe in God, young fellow?" He just asked him, "Do you believe in God?" He always called me young fellow. When he called me Clarence, I knew I was in trouble. Then Clarence says, he says, "What does that have to do with it?" Dr. Bob says, "Everything." I said, "I guess so." "Guess nothing. Either you do or you don't." "Yes, I do." "That's fine," Dr. Bob replied. "Now we're getting someplace. All right, get out of your bed and on your knees. We're going to pray. Get out of your bed, get out of the bed and on your knees. We're going to pray." "I don't know how to pray." "I guess you don't. But that's all right. Just follow what I say, and that will do for now." "I did what I was ordered to do," Clarence said. "There was no suggestion." Dr. Bob was always positive about his faith. Clarence said if someone asked him a question about the program, his usual response was, "What does it say in the good book, the Bible?" Suppose he was asked, what's all this first things first about? Dr. Bob would be ready with an appropriate quotation: "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, then all these things shall be added unto you." So all you guys that say I'd be okay if I was hanging out with Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, I don't think so. All you guys who think, "Well, man, this guy Russell Spatz, he's kind of striving about this God thing, the religious thing. Well, I want to do it the way you're supposed to do it in the big book where they're not alive. I want to hang out with Dr. Bob and Bill Oldtimers." I don't think you do. I don't think you do. I think you're talking about the wrong guys. I was like, I'm light on this stuff compared to these guys. These guys were hanging on for their life. That's what they were. You see, you're entitled to your own opinion. You're just not entitled to your own facts. These are facts. These are historical facts. The guys that wrote this book, in the context of reading, this is what they were doing. Now, for those of you who think I'm putting down AA, you're wrong. I love AA. I even love the fact that there's a big funnel, that there's a huge funnel when people come in and some people make it and some people don't, because I know, you know why I love it? Because I know the message is being preached. And I say that in a good way, not in a bad way, through testimony of other people. I know the truth of the matter is that very few people should be able to say in here, "I never heard this." You know why? Because it's all through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's all through Dr. Bob and the good old timers. And whenever I get a chance to talk about it, I talk about it. You understand? This is all I talk about. And I know I'm not the only one talking about this stuff. I know to a certain extent I'm drowned out by those people that say, "Keep it to yourself," or "I do it my way, you do it your way," and all that sort of stuff. And drowned out by the people that don't like this message. But I know what's being talked to. And I know if you're an outlaw, you have a choice as to who to listen to and who not to listen to. In Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 in your book, in your big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason I use the material is because I want to use the material. I want to use the material. I don't want to use my opinion. I want the material of alcohol. I want you to hear what Alcoholics Anonymous is really about. You know, we need to know our material. So when you walk in here, you just don't think it's a bunch of drunk hanging together, drinking coffee, you know, and talking bullshit. You know, this is the real deal. So here it says, is right here, in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, right after Dr. Bob's night. By the way, you know how Dr. Bob ends his story? If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, or a skeptic, or have some other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Yeah, you would like these guys. Yeah, you would like being sponsored by them. Half of you guys wouldn't be in this room. Here it's Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. This is on page 191. Bob Dotson, he was the guy in the bed. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, of something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't gotten. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening. And I was trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, "Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people." By the way, that's why I'm here tonight. I think I had the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it," has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. Well, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's 1935 to 1939 Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what they were doing. You know, if you want what they had, if you want the great fact, if you want the tremendous fact, if you want what they were talking about in this book, that's what they were talking about in this book. You know, I have people, I've been doing this for a long time. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and say, "I've never heard that message. I've never heard anything like that message." They may come from other states. And you know, that's unfortunate. That's a sad thing. That's a sad thing when you think about it. Because this is the message of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not the watered-down message. Not the message that doesn't offend anybody. You know, I know this message can be offensive to some people. You know, the truth can sometimes be offensive. You know what they? You know what Jack Nicholson said? "And a few good men, the truth, you can't handle the truth." Don't tell me the truth isn't offensive. The truth is offensive to every alcoholic who has ever heard it. You've been offended by the AA message. You were offended when they told you you can't drink. You were offended when they told you you're an alcoholic. You were offended every time any sponsor or anybody told you to shut up, you're stupid, and told you the truth. You were offended until you went out and drank and finally did it and said that son of a bitch was right, and then you stop being offended and you start preaching it. You better look for people who offend you. You better stay away from people that are patting you on the back. Don't stop being childish. Stop being childish. Stop looking for people who are always telling you things that you want to hear to make you feel good and endorsing your horseshit. Stop talking to people that love you but are telling you stuff that's tough to hear and difficult to hear and things you don't want to do, but somehow, some way, you know that there may be some truth in what they're saying. Does that make any sense? You know, I know it's a little whatever. You know, you're going to have to forgive me. I guess next week I'll give a little more testimony. I'll tell one of my war stories, you know, like Chicken on the Roof or the Miners or something like that. You know, I can do that stuff. I can entertain. It's not too entertaining tonight, but doesn't necessarily mean it isn't true. So God bless you. Thank you very much.
Russell is so gentle.